Hey there, beautiful people. It's week two of the Max Fun Drive 2023. Have you become a member yet? We've been telling you for the last week. Come on now. It's the best way to give your support so we can continue to make this show.
It's the last week of the drive, and it only happens once a year. And if you're going to support us during the drive, there are lots of fun goodies that you can get as well. In addition to the peace of mind of knowing that you're helping making all of this here good happen.
I think we decided last week it's great now.
I was about to say that, and then I was like, oh, but you already started to say good, then it's going to be stumble.
It's
and
all
then...
right. It's fine. It's fine. Listen it's here, fine. Y'all. It's if fine. You have
this great. Thank you.
Yes. And if you have forgotten what those goodies are, do not worry. We will be happy to remind you, but you don't have to wait to find out. Go ahead and support us right now. Go to MaximumFun.org/join, select Fanti. And now, okay, we're going to get going with our normal programming. Welcome to Fanti, beautiful people, the podcast for all those complex and complicado conversations about the gray areas in our lives. I am entertainment journalist, editor, and authoress times two, Trayvell Anderson.
And I am just grateful to be in the land of the living. Hallelujah. Grateful that my bed was not my cooling board. I think I feel my help coming. Jerrydale,
listen.
So grateful that you're back with us. This week we are talking about Black Church. Surprise.
Amen.
We're grateful to have y'all here. We're going to be getting into the conversation a little bit later. But first, there is a story that has popped up that I was just not ready. Mm-hmm. Trayvell, mm-hmm. You and I on Saturday were hosting the media summit for NABJLA, and we'll probably talk about that a little bit more later. But by the end of the day, I heard, did you hear about Jonathan Majors? And I was
my
like,
God, today.
What?
Yeah, we were otherwise obligated, so we weren't following the hubbub, I'll call it, that was happening on the Twitters. But okay, so we wanted to talk about this in our Pass the Popcorn segment, right? Because there's so much discourse happening right now that's like beyond the actual alleged incident itself that I think, you know, is just interesting to tease through at this particular cultural moment. But I want to start by saying, you know, this is something that I first articulated for myself, at least, around the whole Jussie Smollett situation a couple years ago, which is that we should start from a place of believing people who say they've been victimized. And we can start from that place and then do whatever, you know, or allow the various entities to do whatever investigations and reports and all that other stuff that will come from there. But we can start from a place of believing people who say they've been victimized, right? And
absolutely.
Some of the latest details about the whole Jonathan Majors situation as we go to record Tuesday morning, okay? Jonathan was arrested on Saturday and charged with several counts of assault in the third degree, 3 counts of attempted assault in the third degree, 1 count of aggravated harassment in the second degree, and 1 count of harassment in the second degree. It is alleged by an unnamed female accuser at the time that he did, quote, strike her about the face with an open hand, causing substantial pain and a laceration behind her ear. The woman also claimed that he, quote, put his hand on her neck, causing bruising and substantial pain. Now, that was Saturday. By Sunday, Jonathan Majors' team and attorney began speaking out, disputing the claims, saying, quote, Jonathan Majors is completely innocent and is provably the victim of an altercation with a woman he knows. They say there is video footage from the vehicle where the alleged incident took place. They have witness testimony from the driver and onlookers and 2 written statements from the woman recanting the allegations. Okay. It also came out on Monday is when I saw this bit of information that Jonathan Majors was actually the person who called 911 due to concerns for the woman's health. And that when the police arrived, they arrested him instead of, you know, tending to the woman in question. The woman reportedly is his girlfriend, wife, partner, who he lives with. Now, those are just the facts of where we are as we go to record. We will see how this all continues to play out, right, as the information is culled together. But the thing that stuck out to me conversation-wise is about, you know, the discourse that seems to be happening at this particular moment on the socials and in the group chats, right? And there, to me, there's multiple discourses happening at once. One, there's this discourse, ongoing discourse for the last few weeks about how Jonathan Majors in particular, this also applies to Michael B. Jordan, are perpetuating and participating in the emasculation of the Black man, right? Jonathan Majors was on the cover of Ebony magazine with a pink background, a little jacket or whatever that people have deemed femme or feminine, right? And then there was that photo, I believe taken by Giancarlo, photographer Giancarlo, of Michael B. Jordan and Jonathan Majors, you know, like, you know, hugged up, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. Y'all know the photo. That's discourse number one that I've seen it, been seeing. Discourse number two, right? Jonathan Majors is at the biggest moment in his career thus far, right? He's got Creed that just came out, Ant-Man and the Quantumanium or whatever that thing's called just came out. Magazine Dreams premiered at Sundance and was, and you know, got very good, you know, response about it's going to be coming out in December. Stay tuned. They just announced that. It was just announced that he's going to be in another movie. Dennis Rodman. He's going to be playing Dennis Rodman, right? It's a particular interesting moment just for him career wise. That's discourse number two. And then discourse number three that I see going on is talking about the physicality, right, of his body in these particular recent roles, and how all of that, all three of those discourses happening at this particular moment in which now there is this allegation, right, of abuse, right? And I will just note before I turn it over to you, because I'm getting tired of talking.
I was tired of him. No, I'm kidding.
Wow. Even as we have... Even as we now have these details, these latest details about perhaps, you know, the allegation being, you know, not true, there have also been these tweets that have popped up from people who allegedly say they knew or know Jonathan Majors from, you know, back in the day when he was in school, and saying that, you know, that they always knew something like this was likely or possible. But so it's just interesting to me to just note all of those kind of slivers of discourse that are happening at this one time. I just find that very peculiar and interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for all of that. No, I'm kidding. I think that was actually a really great summation of it, because I got into the meeting with you yesterday and we were talking about doing this and you had more details that were just coming out that day. And I'm like, this feels like one of those stories that even by the time this episode comes out, there will be mm-hmm. a couple more like new pieces of information or twists. Mm-hmm. I want to touch on the last part that you touched on as far as like the physicality of his Black body. And I more so mean about like the sexualization of him, right? Some mm-hmm. of which he's participated in and some of which has been, you know, kind of foisted on him. I was watching him in all of his interviews, him and Michael B. Jordan in their Creed press tour, and thinking like there's always people coming on to them in the interviews, and I'm not sure what they're supposed to say or do, right? Like in every interview, not every interview, but like many of the interviews is, oh my God, you're so sexy. Oh my God, your body. Oh, you're so this. Oh, you're so that. Oh, baby, I would let you do whatever. Like, and that kind of thing, like to their face. And like, I'm like, I don't know how they were supposed to respond, right? And I was thinking about how hypersexualized they've been as we heard this story. Coming out, I was thinking about like what was going on, like trying to figure out what was happening here, that some woman had been attacked. And I started thinking about the way I've seen the discourse around him happening in the world, around them too happening in the world. And I was like, I hope that it's not like some woman that we don't know. But then it was like, oh, this seems like it's a person that's his partner. And I was like, oh, this is like a hidden partner kind of thing, or like a partner that we've at least not seen him talk about in interviews. And it made me think about also like Jay Ellis, right, who has had a girlfriend for a long time that has been out of public view until getting married. I thought about a lot of things with this story. And you talked about the major moment in his career. And I thought, like, not knowing the details of what happened, he's got to be feeling like, I have just ruined my life right now. Because he has so much coming up for him. Go ahead.
Well, I don't, you mentioned this yesterday, and I don't, if the evidence that his attorney and team have said that they actually have, I actually don't think that there is going to be a slight here, right, for him and his career. He might be feeling that. Or uncertain perhaps about that. Go ahead.
That's not what I meant, though. I meant like my first impression when this first happened, right? Like before we had this new stuff about about the recant or the retraction of a statement and that kind of stuff. Now I feel like we're seeing things kind of start to change and shift in his favor. But like, I mean, you know, he's got Disney and Marvel behind him. Like, I'm sure they're going to figure out how to be able to make it okay. But it does make me wonder what actually happened. I want to hear his story. I want to hear her story. Like, I want to know those things before I can really have like a judgment on it.
Absolutely. And I just want to note, right, that like, because we've seen another public instance of a Black man who was at the height of his career at the time, and a sexual, some impropriety went down, and
say what you mean.
I said what I mean, honey, because you know this is the journalist side. You know you got to use the right language, honey, or else you're gonna be like that girl who got sued. You got to watch your mouth. but right, like I think the issue, and I'm talking about Nate Parker, if that's not clear. And I think that initial thought and response that you had, right, calls back to me a Nate Parker situation, right? And we haven't heard from Nate Parker since that. Well, y'all have, he's had short films and stuff, but he, you know, he's not where he was at that point in his career, right? And I think that part of the kind of media witnessing, if that makes sense. Or kind of the critical media eye that I'm taking at like this situation unfold, this crisis management, right, situation basically unfold, is that, right, Nate Parker fucked up when he opened his mouth, right? is the moment at which it went left. Jonathan Majors himself has not yet said anything, right? And probably should not say anything until this is, you know, completely done, and then we will see what his response is. But you know, too soon to tell.
Yeah, I will say, like, my immediate reaction was also like, I was only centering the voices of Black folks on this because of the dynamics of race in this kind of story. Like, everybody is entitled to their opinion, but it was like, yeah, I want to hear from Black people on this. Like, this is that's the opinions that I really want to center, the voices that I want to hear. And I specifically really wanted to hear the perspectives, and I haven't heard them yet, but like of Tamron Hall and Sherry Shepherd. Like, I want to hear from Black women as this story kind of evolves. So we'll definitely be following this. I don't know. We may be talking about it again on the show here sometime soon, but we want to know what y'all think about this. Hit us up on social media using the hashtag FansHighFam about Pass the Popcorn and Jonathan Major. Pass the pop.
All right, friend.
It's both of us today. It's both of us, apparently. So FansHigh's coming right back. We got more for you.
Oh, Jared, help me out real quick, like, okay? Moments ago, we had asked our listeners to do a little favor for us. Could you remind me what it was? I can't, my memory is a little bad.
Didn't we ask listeners to head to MaximumFun.org/join to support the show because it's the Max Fun Drive and therefore the best time of the year to support the show? I was going to get it exactly all out in one breath.
But that is exactly. Yes, that is exactly what it was. And you know what? I know that some of them have. We love you. We see you. Thank you so much. As of this morning, as we record Fanti, we have received 308 new upgrading and boosting members during this Maximum Fun Drive. Period. We see you. We see each other. A Black Trans Journey Through TV.
Available May 9th.
Out May 9th. Big purr. Love it. Love it. Love it.
That means that over 300 lovely members support a business model that prioritizes the content and creators. As some of you may have heard already, the founder of Max Fun, Jesse Thorne, could have sold this company to some deep-pocketed organization. He didn't. The network is now owned by the workers, so supporting Fanti and Maximum Fun means you're supporting the artists and the workers themselves.
Absolutely, absolutely. And guess what? Once you become a member of the Fanti fam and the Maximum Fun family at MaximumFun.org/join, okay, in addition to doing that amazingly good deed supporting a worker-owned company, all right, you will also get access to hours worth of bonus content from us as Fanti, as well as all of the other shows on the network, okay? And guess what? Also some goodies to sweeten the deal. Jared, tell the people about the different tiers.
That's right. So for $5 a month, you get our bonus content from us and all of the shows on the network. And we actually dropped into our feed earlier this week.
A little amuse-bouche, if you will.
A little bit of the bonus content of Travelle reading from... We See Each Other. Never mind, I'm not going to do it. But like from We See Each Other, we did a whole conversation about it. And it was my first time getting to hear this portion of the book as well. So you can get that and more things that we're going to be doing as well. So you can get all of that for $5 a month. At $10 a month, you get all the bonus content plus our show sticker. Like we designed this, we had this idea that they designed actually for us, but it was, y'all know we've been having a debate about the excellency of tots, tater tots more specifically, and their supremacy over French fries. And
not
so
supremacy.
That is how we really wanted to, you know, we appreciate a tot supremacy. Fry supremacy is way too close to the original, and I just cannot even let you play with fry supremacy.
What is the original, Jarrett Hill?
I'm not doing that with you. So we are playing with that in the sticker, so you can see there's a container of fries that says "very that," and the container of tot says "kinda."
It's
that
so
y'all
cute.
Remember from all of our marketing things like that. It's really, really cool, and we appreciate y'all joining us on all of the different levels that you can. If you want to give more than $10, you certainly can.
Absolutely. If you want to see what the sticker looks like, we posted it to our Instagram. Okay. It's from an artist named Olivia F. from Brooklyn, New York. What's the Brooklyn called? You know what they do in BK. The BK. Olivia F. from the BK.
I'm sure all of the people of Brooklyn greatly appreciate it and feel seen. Let's get back to the show. Welcome back to Fanti. So today we're getting into a bit of a follow-up from an episode that we did at the very beginning of this series.
Not this series.
Or this show, this series, this, you know, whatever it is. We did an episode that Laura Swisher titled "When Gospel Music Slaps and Leaves a Mark," featuring one of our faves, Michael Chin. Michael was the executive producer of the Clark Sisters movie. And in that episode, we talked about our relationship to gospel music, the things that we love about it, the things that really deeply keep us connected to it, and how it serves us, how it restores us, how it really touches us. But also how difficult it can be to hear certain things in gospel music that are anti-gay, anti-queer, anti-trans, and all of the different things that make us feel unwelcome in church. This conversation, we wanted to get into more about the Black church itself, outside of just the music, but kind of the institution of it itself. In that episode, I talked about my own journey in church, and since that episode, I have found myself back in church. And thoroughly enjoying it. And
Reverend Dr. Hill.
That's Professor Hill, bitch. Don't you get it wrong. But
Reverend Dr. Professor
Don't
Hill.
Do it. Don't
okay.
Do it. But I found myself back in church and really getting a lot out of it and finding it has been transformative for my life again in a different way than what I've been thinking of as when I had my parents' religion and when I now have more of my own. And so we wanted to have a conversation about our lens on the church. And I can tell you that there have been various different parts of culture that have been helping me to be able to kind of shape the way that I'm thinking about church now and what I hope it can be as opposed to what it has been for me. There's various different books and different movements, but I've also found it interesting that I have found a lot of safety and familiarity in as a queer Black person in feminist and womanist theologies around Christianity and faith and the church more specifically. And so I kind of want to get into a conversation with you about what your experience of the church has been and where you are with it now and where we can see it going in the future. I also want to say that at the Media Summit this weekend, we had a conversation with Pulitzer Prize winning journalist and author Wesley Lowery and journalism icon and legend Paula Madison about NABJ and what the organization is, and for us more specifically, NABJ LA, what it is and what it can be and should be. And I kind of want to think about this conversation in that same kind of lens as we think about our own relationship to Black church. And so I want to kind of start off with this first question because I know what it was for me. What was an early moment for you, Travelle, that you heard something in church that made you question what you'd heard? And I can go first if you want me to, unless you feel like you got it.
I'm a professional.
So you want me to do it?
I know how to answer questions. I got it. A moment in church that made me quite, well, but I think for me, I've been questioning from the beginning, right? By which I mean, I talk a little bit about this in my book, check it out. But my grandmother, was a pastor. She started her church, the church I grew up in her living room. Her first parishioners were her 8 kids. Okay. but she felt forced/compelled to do that because the church in which she was, you know, in ministry, and in which she kind of got her calling, she says, didn't allow women to preach, didn't allow women into the pulpit. And so in order to answer her calling, right, she left that church and started her own thing in her living room, God's Tabernacle of Prayer, Church of Christian Fellowship. And so from the beginning of when I come into the picture as a baby, right, the foundation of our family's spiritual practices and religion and going to church was, oh, those men who were using the Bible as justification for keeping women out of the pulpit, right? And yet my grandmother has gone on and created her own space. She's in, you know, I don't know, you know, what number she was of Black women starting the church, but she comes from a generation in which she would have been one of the first, right? In that formal way. And so from the beginning, I've been like, questioning, set up to question at least the ways in which the Bible is used in many Black churches to justify various forms of oppression. And then, right, I'm sure we all had those moments where, like, you know, somebody was reading the scripture, you know, for service, and they said something about, you know, what's it, thou shalt obey thy master or some, you know the line that the slave masters used, oh, yes, right, to justify, right? I remember hearing that when I was younger in church and being, well, now, hold on, wait a minute. You know, like, it just, so there have been a number of those instances.
That kind of hits, like, honor and obey in marriage vows. Mm-hmm. I remember being a kid and being like, ooh, that feels like a lot. I know for myself, I remember being a kid and being like, I don't think that makes sense. Like, we're the only, like, our denomination, and it felt like they were saying our church was the only people going to heaven. Like, now, come on. That, and, like, or the ideas around women not being able to do this or not being able to show up there, it always didn't make sense to me. I was like, And then there was a moment, though, when I remember, I remember coming home from college, my first semester, like, coming back home, and going to church and hearing the pastor that I had grown up hearing. And I believe I mentioned this in the episode, in the gospel music episode, but he says, and single moms, don't let your boys grow up to be punks and sissies. And like, I had a single mom, right? And like, I mean, I have been called a punk and a sissy on the playground. Listen,
okay.
Right. And that was hate speech. And it was the moment of me being like, oh, everything that comes out of the pulpit is not necessarily something that is coming from the voice of God. Right. Like, because I don't believe that God said that. And it made me like, it was like a pivotal moment for me, because I remember being hurt by it. But like, I remember like, it, after that moment, it was very like Charlie Brown. I didn't hear anything else. I just could not hear anything else. And like, it stuck with me. And I remember always thinking like, oh, you have to be more critical about everything that you hear, as opposed to just really taking it. And I, again, as a kid, I had questioned things, but that was the moment that it really, really changed for me. I know for you, we were talking about doing this conversation as a fan and an anti, and you were like, well, I don't really feel like I have a whole lot of fan. How do you think about church today? And because the way that the question was set up was, what are the parts of the Black church that still resonate? But I know that you were like,
Yeah, I do not think that. So I want to be clear. So let me give a little disclaimer, right? For me, this conversation is about the Black church as an institution, right? Which is not to, which is a shit show in my estimation and experience. Which is not to say that, you know, folks cannot and have not found a home, right, within the institution of the Black church. It's also not to say that I have not experienced any sort of joy and, you know, wondrousness in the Black church, because all of those things, I think, should be a given, at least when you're talking to me. However, the institution of the Black church, I think, I struggle to see any positives institutionally, and perhaps the institutionalization of Black folks' spirituality and spiritual practices is part of the issues therein.
All that face that you just gave right now, though, fully for YouTube. Thank you for everyone watching on YouTube, because you got all of that that the podcasters didn't appreciate. So thank you.
But what about for you? I know that you mentioned in your intro that you, and, you know, and you already talked about like the beginnings of your, you know, spiritual religious experience with the Black church, and that now you are back in the Black church. What are the parts of the Black church institutionally that work for you?
Well, and I mean, we keep referencing it as the Black church, the Black church, the Black church. I feel like whoever's doing captions can just do like a hotkey for that and just hit it every single time.
Which also is just church for us, right? Like, you know.
I was going to say, I think there's an important thing to say there is like, I go to a church that is pretty multi-ethnic, but is led by Black folks and has a very Black church kind of base to it, right? Or foundation or undertone. But I have found, for me, it's been a lot about me feeling like I'm in flow. I think that being able to be a part of a church virtually and in person are such different experiences than what I grew up having in church. And I did a reel a number of months ago. I'd gone in person to church here in Los Angeles. I go to one church here in Hollywood, and like I had gone in person and had a great time in service. And as we were departing, this woman next to me had written a note and like handed it to me, and I wasn't expecting that. And I was immediately triggered. And I was like, she was like, this is for you. And I was like, oh, thank you. And I took it, and I was like nervous that it was going to be something offensive or something. Like, I've had people say things to me, and I've heard things in church that have been really, really hurtful and problematic and all that kind of stuff over the years, as most queer people have. And so I was anxious about that. And so I read the note, and it was a beautiful note telling me that I was anointed and that, you know, all of these different things. And it was really beautiful. And I remember thinking that I have been feeling in flow lately, right? And like church has been a big part of feeling connected to that, being in flow. And being able to hear different voices and perspectives has actually been a lot better for me than I would have expected as a kid, being used to one pastor and always hearing that one pastor's voice. And so the virtual church experience for me has been great, because I can be at home in my own clothes. I don't have to worry about anybody looking at me or being, judging my own experience. And then also sometimes going in person is great, because we know that the in-person experience is so much different, and you can feel the connection and the power of that. And so for me, it has been something that has been familiar in a lot of ways as a kid, but also is starting to feel new and my own in a different kind of way. And I've really, really appreciated that. I guess kind of moving from like the fan piece to the anti, there's plenty to be upset about within Black church, as you referenced it being a shit show. And I think like church in general is a bit of a shit show. And we've seen that especially over the course of my life, we've seen the ways in which church is problematic and been really, really difficult. I know for myself, on the anti side, it's been challenging, because I find nowadays when I'm in like faith communities, mm-hmm. I don't hear so much hateful rhetoric about homosexuality or queerness or transness. I don't hear it in the churches that I'm in the way that I might have when I was younger. But now there's just like nothing about it, or it just like randomly pops up in a little bit of a moment, right? And like there's just no addressing of it. And that is also frustrating in a different kind of way, mm-hmm. because it's like, you don't really feel at ease and comfortable and seen and respected and appreciated, but like you can kind of get lulled into that. Go ahead.
I don't know where I've said this before, but I have said it before. Maybe it was on this podcast or somewhere else. But you know, for me, as the Black non-binary person of trans experience that I am, right, the lack of meaningful and expressive articulation of policies or parameters, perhaps is a better word, in terms
or
of
perspective, at least
or perspective, sure, around like the church's positioning as an institution as it relates to queer folks, trans folks, et cetera, not having that will keep me out of the church house. Because, right, to me, not speaking about it is just as bad as speaking badly about it. I think it might make folks, and for me for a time, it made me feel more comfortable being in certain church spaces because we just weren't going to talk about it, right? But then seeing and feeling and moving through this particular socio-political moment that we are in right now, in which churches, the Black church more specifically, can and have been weaponized against what is in the best interest of all of us as Black people, you know, you gotta make it plain for me. I want to see it on the website. I remember us having a conversation about, I can't remember who. I think we might have been talking about Sarah Jakes Roberts. Her, there was an LA Times article written by Darian Simone Harvin, actually, on Sarah Jakes Roberts and her as a representation of like a new church leader, a new, you know, Black women centric ethos, right, around spirituality and leadership and whatnot. And I remember saying to myself that, oh, wow, yes, you know, she's being presented and perhaps legitimately is this, like, you know, quote unquote, new age representation of what church life and living can be, as is, mind you, a host of other, you know, gospel artists and other ministers, right, who are doing the quote unquote, more progressive, you know, way of church. And I remember also saying to myself in that moment, well, you know, I know that she's also part of her daddy's umbrella, ultimately. And I remember the interview that T.D. Jakes did with Mark Lamont Hill on Huffington Post Live a number of years ago, in which Mark Lamont Hill asked him about his positioning, you know, on it. And his response in the moment wasn't horrible. Wasn't super bad, but it wasn't good. It wasn't welcoming. It was very middle of the line. But the church community responded and felt as if it was too middle of the line.
No, they felt it was too far left.
Well, right. Like it wasn't. That's my point, right? Even though it was middle of the line, they felt it was super, you know, progressive, right?
Yeah.
A violation of what they understand and interpret the Bible to be. And he ended up coming out with a clarification, right, of what he meant, which was not great, in my estimation and experience. And so I needed to be spelled out for me, because I think that angst that you felt about the letter that the woman gave you, the note that she gave you before you open it, right? I'm not interested in being in a spiritual space or a space that's supposed to be for my spiritual, you know, upliftment, right? And have to navigate that very real, legitimate angst because of our prior experiences. And so, you know, say it with your chest or leave it on the playground.
I mean, I can't disagree with any of that. And I think that it is one of the things that for myself, I tweeted a little bit ago that I felt like most of the Black gay men that I know have made a lifestyle out of forgiving straight Black men. And like, I think a lot of that is in church, right? And a lot of that is our pastors, along with like the other Black men in our lives or the ones that are not even.
My God, today.
Right. And so like, I mean, it frustrates me because I feel like I have been in church, and I should say, like, I virtually attend the Potter's House in Dallas every Sunday morning. And we have like a Wednesday that I sometimes am in on as well. And like, I love the community of faith there. I think that they are doing really extraordinary work in the community and in the world. And like, I've also heard Bishop Jake say things that I've felt really, really hurt by, right? Or at least really felt like, right? He's made comments about HIV and AIDS where I was like, wait a minute, right? But also like, he's always kind of like avoided being too far in on saying anything about homosexuality, as you talked about with the Mark Lamont Hill clip that I feel like so many people have seen. I think even that example is interesting if we think about the Message Bible, which I always think is a little bit too wordy for me, so I'm not really into her. She's a little too verbose. I'd be like, okay, girl, come on. It didn't say all that. The author of the book is a man named Eugene H. Peterson, and it is recorded that he was, you know, at toward the end of his life talking about homosexuality and saying he didn't think it was evil or a sin. And he was also the head of a church. And like when that came out, similarly to as you talked about, like people felt like it was way too left for him and for them. And like he had to come out with a statement, pulling it back and pulling it back. And then like, you know, mm-hmm. after leaving the church, what then said more about, you know, how he thought about it honestly and didn't see it as evil or as a sin even. And so it's hard for me even to be in church and hear that sometimes or know that there's a perspective coming from someone who thinks that way. But I also do feel that I am getting something out of it that is more than I'm not, right? It's not every day. It's not every week. It's not every month. But there are moments when I'm like, this still is not okay for me. And that's challenging.
And that, you know, you saying that made me think of something that made me smile because it's a funny in my head, which is, you know, there are churches led by Black queer folks that have that... In my experience, the Black churches that do exist, and by Black church in this particular example, I define as let me rephrase that. There are churches led by Black queer folks, right, that are welcoming and explicitly and expressly, right, make space for queer and trans folks. They absolutely do exist. Okay, but in my experience, the music at those places don't be hitting on what it be hitting on, okay? And that's an issue for me, okay? Because, you know, folks always say...
Okay, so I did not think that's where that was going.
I know. I flipped it up on you. But that's what folks always say, right? To me, in my experience, right? Folks say that, oh, well, you know, there are queer-affirming, trans-affirming churches, some led by Black folks, right? Like, you know, if being in a physical church community type space is something that you would be interested in, those places actually do exist, perhaps being some sort of, you know, interrogation on, right, what we consider to be the institution of church. And in more specific, the Black church, perhaps. But some of those other particulars around what makes the Black church, right, are missing. And so I have found it more useful and more generative for me and my spiritual journey to think of the church, and in my case, the Black church, as a space beyond the place with the steeple, you know, a place beyond the pew. So, you know, I have said before that for me, church is the dance floor, right? For me, church can be, you know, the table with a nice plate of chicken, okay? Of the fried variety. Church can be a book club, right? It can be a movie night. And I think when we begin to think more expansively about church as something beyond a physical space in the ways that we have known it, particularly as Black queer folks who've grown up in the Black church, it opens up a world of possibilities of what our spiritual journeys can actually look like. And it allows us to, in my experience, more readily create the relationship with the universe, the ancestors, everybody in their mominium, that is most useful and servicing, you know, ourselves and, you know, a greater good for a community.
I love that. I feel like I'm a part of a church that is more conservative than I am, right?
And how is that for you?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, I feel like it's been a challenge for me, right? But I know that you talked about music specifically, right? Like, there is a certain level of music that I want to be able to hear, a certain level of singing that is going to take me somewhere.
Amen.
There's a certain level of what I come for from a word right, from a preacher, that I want to be able to be smart and thoughtful and incisive and all of those different kinds of things. And I, to me, I'm getting those things even in the moments when I'm like, oh, I have a question about that, right? I wrote a tweet that says, I need a sex positive, queer friendly, gender thoughtful religion to reflect the God who created sex, made us in their image, and we all know is non-binary. I'm tired of serving an incredibly progressive God through a conservative church that ignores me and people like me.
It's the God in me.
Calm down.
I just wanted it to be a nice little soundtrack under you. That's all I wanted, you know?
We appreciate the underscore, right? That you're on the organ, essentially. I think I feel my help coming. So thank you.
Amen.
But I'm challenged because I feel like church is so conservative and I don't see God that way. I think of God as being incredibly progressive, as progressive as anyone. And I also don't think of God as a person. I don't think of God with gender. I don't think of God as he. I don't think of God as... I have a really hard time with the idea of God being jealous in the ways that we use that language. I have a lot of challenge around the ways that we... that we discuss a lot of these different things in church, and it makes me really, really frustrated, and it makes me not always feel as at home as I could, but I do also feel like I'm at home and in community with the church community that I've developed. Did you want to say something else before we wrap up?
You know, I just want to say that no, I ain't got nothing.
I didn't think so. The look on your face, I was like, I can see something processing. But she ain't got shit. We want to hear from y'all. Hit us up on social media using the hashtag FantiFam. We're on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at FantiPodcast. Coming up, why y'all hate us so much in listener feedback. And we're getting into those dishonorable mentions. We'll be right back. Hello again. Question.
Not this.
Have you joined the FantiFam? I haven't done a Dipsy ad in a while, so I felt like I could give you a little something. You can be a member of the Fanti Fam by supporting the show at MaximumFun.org/join.
That's you. Yes. This is my Dipsy voice. Okay. This is my sexy voice. So, you know, I hope y'all like it. Listen. Okay. Anyway, listen, y'all heard the man. Okay. Help support a show that's doing the good Lord's work around here. Amen. Changing the lives of
these producers. Let me tell you, you know what? Y'all show it out. Y'all show it
Listen,
out.
We be out here impacting some folks, okay? And it may sound a little bit dramatic, but that's what y'all tell us, okay? Here's a listener letter from Nicole showing her love and appreciation of the show. Hello, Fanti. I wanted to write a quick note to thank you for doing this podcast. Thank you for your frankness and vulnerability and for sharing your perspectives and expertise. I learn a lot from you every week. I truly believe that listening to y'all has made me a better person. Sincerely, Nicole, a white woman doing her best to become a woman who happens to be white.
Yes!
See, we are changing lives one white friend at a time. Look at us.
There was a time when I wanted our merch to include something for white people that says spicy white on it, but like,
screaming,
that doesn't feel like an actually good idea, so we're not gonna do it. But the idea of person who happens to be white on a shirt is also funny to me. But go ahead, sorry.
Absolutely. But you know, we want to uplift, in particular, I know I do, the Black women and femmes who also support our show. Special shout out to Nikki Mayo. Special shout out to Legal Sojourner. Okay, I like calling her Legal Sojourner, you know, because that's her Twitter name. Also, a shout out to Bianca, okay, my homie Bianca, who is a higher tier member of the Fanti family. I won't put her business out there and say hi, but she up there, and y'all could use her as inspiration as you are figuring out which level you should come in the name of Jesus. Amen.
Somewhere upstairs, all of heaven is like, what is going on? What are we being called on for?
Right, you calling us too much.
Listen, talking about the different levels that we offer during the Max Fun Drive, for $20 a month, you can choose between our Max Fun Culinary Kit or our lovely embroidered rocket hat. I'm telling y'all already know that I'm into the food. So the Max Fun Culinary Kit is very much so my vibe. We talked last week about the apron. I'm actually going to be cooking dinner tonight, so I'm going to be wearing the apron again tonight. And like, I always just feel so like,
you should take some photos for the people so they can see, you know, what it's giving.
Maybe we'll see if y'all deserve that,
you know, for your OnlyFans.
Where have hypersexualized Bible content? Like, what do I have?
We're gonna do ASMR reading John 3:16, for God so loved the world.
That he gave his own. I'm not even doing that with you. I'm not even touching that. If you're not into the culinary kit, you can opt for the colorful Max Fun Drive rocket logo hat instead. The embroidered eco-friendly cap has an adjustable back and will keep you cool and shaded on all of your podcast field walks, which actually maybe I should have the hat instead, because that sounds like me. Naturally, you'll receive your choice of restickable sticker, a letterpress membership card, and access to all of our bonus content. We have all these other kinds of things to offer. Go ahead, Travelle.
We do have so much to offer. And you know what? You mentioned earlier that we are already at a little over 300, you know, new upgrading and boosting members. We've got a stretch goal for you all, okay? If we get to 500 new or upgrading
Okay. Wait. Hold on. Wait.
We're doing it.
I don't know that we actually agreed on this.
We're doing it.
We talked about it.
If we get
500
new or upgrading members by the end of the Max Fun Drive, okay? Jared and I, who both do not know how to swim, we will learn how to swim and we will document a portion of that journey for the Maximum Fun members as bonus content. Okay, now if you want to see me just be graceful in a pool, because you know she's a graceful.
Then sign up for a different show, because it's not gonna be graceful. I should say,
listen, maximumfun.org/join. Okay.
Listen, I pitched this as an idea, and I'm now very against it.
You did.
Information, if you want to join us, maximumfun.org/join. We appreciate y'all. We'll see you live on Instagram also on Thursday afternoon. It'll be noon Pacific time. And we'll make sure to share the information out as we talk behind the scenes of this episode.
I have to change that time to you, friend, so I'm just going to jump in and let them know it won't be at noon, because I got to change that time. Just gonna change it on you live, friend.
We'll be sending out the information then.
Yes, it'll be. We'll post about it. We'll post about it on the socials. Y'all will be fine. Okay, thank y'all so much.
MaximumFun.org/join. Thank you. We appreciate you.
Period. Welcome back, beautiful people. We are going to get into our listener feedback segment. Our opportunity to read out your emails, your questions, your thoughts about this fabulous show that we do here. We've got an email here from Elizabeth. This is in response to the New York Times anti-trans, you know, coverage discourse that we had on the show. Elizabeth says, I love the show and especially enjoy hearing your take on current events. Though I try to stay informed, I feel like I don't have a lot of opportunities to hear from Black journalists. I'm writing to ask a follow-up on the New York Times open letter you spoke about a few weeks ago. I'm a New York Times subscriber. I was aware that New York Times coverage of trans issues is generally trash, and after hearing about the letter, I looked it up, read it, and signed on. But I wonder if I should do something more. Should I unsubscribe? Is there a better national/international news source that I should be supporting instead? I also support NPR and my local paper, SF Chronicle, but I feel like the New York Times has the resources to cover more stories in more depth than a lot of outlets. Would appreciate any recommendations you have. I chose this question because it's giving like that boycott or not boycott energy conversation that we've had a number of times on the show before. I will take trans privilege and start answering first and say, I think I will tell you what I have done for myself and you can decide what you do for you. I am somebody who believes in paying for the journalism that I like and that I appreciate. I have entirely too many subscriptions to too many publications. I made the decision to unsubscribe from the New York Times. Or let me rephrase that and say, I made the decision to not resubscribe to the New York Times. I was a subscriber, but you know, the my year had lapsed and they had an old credit card on file. And so I had to update it in order to keep it going. And I decided not to, I consciously decided not to update it. Because that was a choice that I made for myself. To that end, where else do I get my news from? I subscribe to the Los Angeles Times. I subscribe to a number of the Black magazines. Essence in particular pops to mind. I also support a number of nonprofit and independent news outlets, whether that be Capital B, whether that be the 19th News, whether that be a number of journalists who have Substacks, I also support. And that is how I get my news, and how I support the news that I want to put my particular funds toward. But you'll have to make the decision of what works for you. But there are other national/international outlets that you can get your reporting from if you decide that unsubscribing from the New York Times is something that makes sense for you.
I don't think I can say anything other than that. That was great. We have an email from what is this name here?
You're disrespectful.
We have an email that's getting best friend privilege from Bianca. Mm-hmm. Every Saturday, my grandma I should say that this is about the Copaganda episode that we did for y'all last week, which I thought was amazing. Like, really, really good episode.
It was really good. Shout out to Tia. Shout out to Dr. Loggins.
Absolutely. Every Saturday, my grandma forced me and my sisters to watch Cops, followed by America Wanted. I had nightmares thinking the criminals highlighted on these shows would come after me, and I would be relieved every time there was an update that the criminals were caught. My love for cop shows spiraled from there. I watched everything from Blue Bloods to X-Files, about beat cops and detectives to forensic scientists to
What is it with you? Don't put that on me, honey.
To private investigators. You started off that way today. She says, to forensic scientists and private investigators. To this day, I still love it. In this world, bad was bad and good was good. And I trusted the cops and knew they were making decisions with the best of intentions. Even when they behaved badly, i.e. Elliot Stabler on Law & Order SVU, mm-hmm. which I think is a really good point. She goes on to say, since the death of George Floyd, these shows have all adjusted to, quote, better policing practices and to conversations about the changing times. Real mixed bag there. You could mm-hmm. have a whole convo about that. The difference with real cops is that I don't trust them. Their presence is intimidating and judgmental, not warm and concerned like on television. Cops don't make me feel safe. They haven't helped anyone I know, but they have done a lot of harm. In my case, entertainment doesn't make me trust cops. It never will.
So I pulled this because I think, you know, a lot of the discourse that we had in the episode, right, was about the ways that television leads people to think, right? Because it is a Copaganda in particular is a form of propaganda, leads people to think and to think that one, the job is, you know, jumping over, you know, cars and kicking down doors, as you mentioned, and kind of that high action thing, but also thinking that they're super, super friendly or like the people that will protect us. And similarly, in my case, you know, entertainment it has allowed me to just see it as entertainment. And I think this ultimately gets to the point we were talking about media literacy, right? And the lack thereof, I'll put it that way, in the broader populace, because there will be many people who don't see and aren't able to you know, make the difference, if you will, that Bianca articulated.
All right. You ready to get into these mentions?
Well, let's do it then.
All right, it's now time for our dishonorable mentions. These are the stories or people that caught our attention this week that deserve a call out, either for their good or for their stupid. You want to get started?
I will start with a dishonorable mention first and foremost to Spotify. This story came out late last week, I believe it was. You all will remember, and I'm sure we talked about on this show, Spotify's response to the whole Joe Rogan COVID misinformation, use of the N-word situation from last year. In response to that, the CEO had announced that they would create a $100 million diversity fund to be able to platform and support, you know, diverse creators. Well, the report came out that a year later, Spotify has spent less than 10% of its alleged committed $100 million diversity fund. And also not to mention, they're laying people off left and right also at this particular moment, which is super interesting, right? How, you know, diversity efforts, you know, become a Band-Aid, or at least they present them as a solve or potential Band-Aid for various issues. And then just a year later, it's not that much of a concern, huh? Less than 10%. Anyway, an honorable mention to, there's this exhibit in Miami called Give Them Their Flowers, an exhibit of Black LGBTQ plus Miami history. It's taking place right now at the Little Haiti Cultural Center Art Gallery. Give Them Their Flowers is a first of its kind exhibit to celebrate Miami's Black LGBTQ plus history. And obviously it comes at a critical time in that state, right, for Black histories, queer histories, which are all under attack by Florida's legislation and, you know, the Don't Say Gay laws, all of that that we've discussed about at length. The exhibit pays homage to Miami's Black queer history by merging historical research, archival imagery, artifacts, oral histories, video, and portraits of Black LGBTQ Miamians over the age of 40. And it's led by community historian and founder of Black Miami Dade, Nadege Green. I saw this pop up on my timeline late last week. I obviously don't live in Florida, but wanted to give a shout out to this. This is the type of work that is necessary, right? As we see the political situation going down and getting worse, may I add, specifically in Florida. So shout out to Nadege and the folks over there. And then last but not least, this week is Trans Week of Visibility and Action. The day after you all hear this episode, which is Friday, is Trans Day of Visibility. Trans Week of Visibility and Action in specific is a week-long digital campaign to mobilize folks to stand up and advocate on behalf of trans justice. As we know, as I've already mentioned, there is a legislative assault happening on queer folks and especially trans folks, especially trans youth. If you go to trans on any social media platform, Twitter or Instagram, @trans_week, it is a page created and campaign created by Chase Strangio from the ACLU and Raquel Willis, basically trying to get people activated around pushing back against some of this legislative assault that we're seeing. Because as we know, as I speak about in my book, We See Each Other, Black Trans Journey Through TV and Film, out May 9th, visibility alone has not and will not protect us. Action is also important. And if you call yourself an ally, if you call yourself somebody who supports and is interested in the work that we do on this show, follow that Instagram page, that Twitter page, figure out how you can do some, add some action behind your allyship, accompliceship, etc. What about you, Jared? What are your honorable mentions and dishonorable mentions?
Well, one of them I want to touch on, you talked about Spotify and the ways that we've seen companies and movements, you know, after the racial reckoning, how people were springing up to like give money and be a part of the conversation and want to be better and all these other things. And we see that happening at Spotify. We see that happening in across industries all over the place. And I saw a share from from this this influencer that I follow. Her name is Ms. Christine on Instagram. And she is always demonstrating plus size fashion and ways to wear things and, you know, doing like trying on the thing that you got versus what you ordered versus what you got and that kind of stuff. And like her videos are really, really dope. And she's always kind of like advocating as well for plus size women. And she posted a video just recently saying that of all the fashion weeks over the course of this last fashion season, there were 9,137 looks that were put out by 219 brands. And only 17 brands had a plus size model. And I just thought she talks about it, and we'll have the link to her Instagram reel in the episode notes. But she talks about how like people are not advocating for plus size models in the way that we think we are, or that progress is not happening in the way that we think it is. And we can see that in Fashion Week and obviously in many other kinds of ways as well. So I just wanted to lift that up.
I just want to say one thing really quickly on this issue. You know, just if you would like a filmic companion to the shit show that is the fashion industry, specifically for larger bodied folks, you got to check out Fat Girls. Okay, starring Monique, PHAT Girls with a Z, I believe. I know you weren't expecting that, but it talks about this. It talks about this issue. I'm just saying.
No, you're right. You're right. I definitely thought this was going to be like a documentary or like, sorry. You know, there's a new piece out by this. That's where I thought that was going. Okay. So yes, check out Ms. Christine. She goes by Trendy Curvy, and her videos are really, really dope. In a random, but I thought about this last week and I was like, I need to do this. I want to give a shout out to the black guy voice of Siri. Now stay with me and I'm going to bless you. If you go into Siri, you can choose a voice, right? And they have American, Australian, you know, different backgrounds. But then they have five different voices. And there's a black guy voice. And I changed my voice on Siri a long time ago because it was always like the, you know, seemingly white woman or whatever it was. Or just like a woman's voice. And the way that I be talking back to Siri, it felt like misogyny. It felt like, it felt really rude and aggressive. And because like, I'll call Siri a dummy bitch at any moment, right? And I was like, I can't be doing that with a woman. It doesn't feel okay. Because, you know, Siri loves to be like, I can't work right now, or it's not operating, or I didn't get that. And I'd be like, what the, you know. So then when they added more voices, there's a black guy Siri voice, and I've had him now for years. Wow. And the other day I asked him a question and I realized how much kinder I am now. And I'm like, when Siri's not working, I'm like, bro, I get it. We're all out here trying.
Oh, wow.
Hi, I'm Siri. Choose the voice you'd like me to use.
He's giving very, I live in Ladera Heights. Okay. You know, I grew up in Inglewood. I'm with it.
Okay.
I'm with it. So
I just want to note, friend.
Is it not hitting for you?
It's not hitting for me in the way it hit for you, and that's okay. It don't have to. It's your phone. However, I will note your reaction to the fact that you were cussing out woman Siri, and now you are so much more gentle with the black man series. We need to talk about that, friend.
Well, I should say, like, I was still cussing him out. Now the more evolved me is much more kind to Siri, to Google, whatever I have in this house.
To all of the AI in your home, because they're about to take over.
Exactly, right? I've had to start being like, hey, bruh, I get it. You're not connected to the internet for some reason. That doesn't make sense, right? But whatever it is.
Like, you're preparing for them to take over. I understand.
Exactly. The last thing I want to say here is I want to give a special shout out to three folks who have been leading a very big effort that paid off very well this past Saturday. I want to shout out to Travelle Anderson, to Ray Love Jr., and Mary Grace Bukow, who have been our central leaders on the NABJLA Media Summit that was on March 25th at USC. We had an extraordinary day of programming and amazing, fantastic people coming out to be able to learn, be able to be enriched and encouraged. And I could not have been happier with how the event ran. And I'm just really, really proud of y'all, proud of our board, proud of the full team that pulled this together on the day of. We had about 100 people or more, I believe, from our team, but also from volunteers, from sponsors, from talent, from all kinds of different people. And you all did such a fantastic job. And so I want to say that I've said that to y'all privately, but I also want to say it publicly that I'm incredibly proud of this team and what y'all pulled off on Saturday. We worked really hard to be able to bring this to fruition, and I was really, really proud of it. So congratulations to everybody.
Yes, we ate that. We sure the hell did. All right, now it's time for...
Wait, hold on. Because I wrote y'all a long, like, message. It was like, it's a beautiful note. And Travel's response back was, we ate that.
Yes, okay. Now it's time for...
Black history is happening every day.
All righty. Today's Black History name, Black History fact, I wanted to share with you all a little bit about Ajita Wilson, okay? Born January 12th, 1950 in Brooklyn, New York. Look at the BK again. Ajita was a model and actress. She began her career as a performer in New York's infamous Red Light District in the early 70s. After being recruited into the porn industry, she gained a loyal following of fans as the star of numerous European softcore and hardcore adult films. Ajita starred in at least 46 titles, a number that is surely not exhaustive. She was even featured as a Jet Beauty of the Week in the August 20th, 1981 issue, the caption of which reads, "Beautiful Ajita Wilson from Rome, Italy, is a movie actress in Europe. When she is not making films, she enjoys reading, dancing, and people." Unfortunately, as Professor Matt Richardson notes in the 2020 Transgender Studies Quarterly article, Ajita Wilson, Blaxploitation, Sexploitation, and the Making of Black Womanhood, Ajita's film performances are the only accessible archive of her life. Only after her death on May 26, 1987, did the world learn she was a woman of trans experience. When a director she worked with was asked to comment on what was then just speculation that she was trans, he reportedly replied, "She was charming, beautiful, and very professional. The rest is not important." Ajita is one of the transcestors listed in my book. And no, I'm not going to stop telling y'all that my book comes out May 9th, because guess what? Y'all need to go buy it. Stop playing games. Okay.
I thought you were going to say, I'm not going to stop telling you that because my book comes out May 9th. Damn it.
I should have. But, you know, because it's Trans Visibility, Trans Week of Visibility in Action, I wanted to include one of those names that you may not hear about. We often hear, and it often seems like people feel as if trans people, you know, dropped, into this earth, you know, with Laverne Cox on the cover of Time magazine or Orange is the New Black. But we have a long history, a long transcestry that precedes us. And the fact that a Black trans woman, Ajita Wilson, was a Jet Beauty of the Week in 1981, like, come on, stop fucking playing with me. The end.
That's going to wrap up this episode of The Fan Tie. We appreciate y'all so much. If you are looking out The Fan Tie, we are grateful to have y'all. If you're watching on YouTube, we appreciate you. Want to let you know, like, this is a new show on YouTube, but we have 3 seasons of content on the podcast side. So go check out past episodes of this show. We also talked about the gospel music episode that was episode 6, I think, something very early in the
3, I think. Yeah, very early.
It was very early in the pod. But if you want more information on that episode, you can go check it out. If you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, we're at Fanti Podcast on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok. Use that hashtag FantiFam. You can shoot us an email to fanti@maximumfun.org.
And as we mentioned, this is the last week of the Maximum Fun Drive. We would really appreciate your support. That's at MaximumFun.org/join. The various different levels, you get access to bonus content, including the amuse-bouche of me reading the intro to my book, We See Each Other, A Black Trans Journey Through TV and Film, out May 9th.
Okay, you know what? You know what?
I had to do it one last time. Okay, I'm done. Okay, as always, our music is brought to you by the Grammy Award-winning Corece. That's C-O-R.E-C-E, wherever you get slayworthy music. Our graphics are by Ashley Wynn and the folks over at Moonhouse Creative. Our editor is Anne-Marie Huber, and our producer is Palmira Muniz.
And our senior producer is Laura Swisher! This is a production of Maximum Fun.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.
We've got our blooper. Actually, that is not the blooper. Do not use that, to be clear. Do not do that.
Do not do that.